Hello, everyone, and welcome to Oh, a Podcast, the podcast about playing games and making games, brought to you by O-Rock Studios. I'm Paul Franzen, the head boy of O-Rock Studios.
And I'm Michael Gray. I'm the head writer for O-Rock Studios.
How's it going, Michael?
I suppose it's going fine. So you've got big news, maybe? Or, I don't know.
Do I?
What's going this on with Francie and Friends? You've been posting about it all the time, yeah.
Lots of stuff, yeah. I mean, I feel like I've been saying for months that it's basically done, but now, I mean, I'm probably going to be announcing a release date in the next couple of weeks. It's ready to go. It just went through beta testing. I've fixed all the typos that our testers found. The glitches that I amazingly found in my Nigerian prints like 3 years after we made the darn game.
So what do you mean by there were actual glitches in that? How is that?
In my Nigerian prints? Yeah. Oh, wait, what was it? There were problems with some of the sound effects. There was something weird where the email sent sound effects like just weren't running, like they weren't playing.
Oh, no.
And I figured that I think it was actually because I updated RenPy, however you want to pronounce it. I updated the software, and I think the updated version changed how the software reacts to different lines of code. So anyway, it was all fixed. It's all taken care of. I'll test it again when I have what I think is the final version on Steam and see if there's any other issues. But yeah, that was that was a bit of a shocker.
Yeah. Oh, man. Okay.
But yeah, so, I have the Steam page set up, I have the screenshots, the trailer, all the stupid fiddly little images that Steam needs you to make. They make you make, like, 5 or 6 different logos in order to post a game on Steam. Like, you have to put a logo that goes on the store page, a logo that appears in search results, the logo that appears if there's a sale, and... like you can't just copy and paste it because they're all different sizes, but they're also like all different dimensions, different like scales, like some are wider and some are taller, stuff like that. So I mean, my strategy was I made one image that I thought looked good, and then I basically remade it 6 different times.
That works totally well. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It took a little while. The biggest problem, and people who follow me on Twitter at Paul M. Franzen probably saw me having some frustration with the little tiny image that appears in search results. I had a lot of trouble kind of squeezing things into that, but,
I figured out the problem. Okay, so this is really stupid, but what you said just solved me with the problem with, Mermaid Mission Titanic. I think that's going to be the name of the game.
Oh, that's good. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Unless one of the testers can think of a better one. But basically, I finished writing the Mermaid game. I don't know if I've mentioned this on the previous podcast or not.
We talked about it a bit last month. We talked about whether I/O-Rock Studios could publish it for you, I think.
Yeah. So now I've written the game, and there's two basic... let me get to the problem. I've been trying to load this code, and the game keeps just throwing it right back at me, saying this is bad, and these are all if statements. I think it's because I wrote the game in Microsoft Word, which automatically capitalizes the word if, because it's the first word in the line.
Oh, that might do it, yeah.
And so it does. This program does not accept if, a capitalized if. It must be lowercase, otherwise it doesn't recognize it as a command
That's
function.
That's hilarious. Yeah, I think RenPy does do stuff like that. Yep.
All right, so I'll just have to replace all that stuff, and then hopefully that means everything else is golden. There will be no more errors.
That's usually how coding goes. You just code it once, and then it's done, and you don't have to worry about it ever again. That's not how it usually goes.
Yeah, you fix one error and that created 95 more.
That's how it usually goes. And then you test it 800 times over the course of development, and you send it out to testers, and they immediately find 6 other things you did wrong. Yeah, some people found glitches with the second Francie Drew game, too. There was a scene where, you know how sometimes we have like a flash of lightning striking. There was a part where the lightning just flashed infinitely. It just kept going. It did not stop flashing.
That was amazing. Why would anybody complain about that?
It was fun.
Okay, well now, yeah, okay, so I put that fix in, and as expected, we've got like about 20 more things for me, 20 yep. more problems to solve. One of them is super long. Okay, so I'm going to close that here and ignore that and focus on the podcast.
Oh, you're not going to sit there and code a game while we're talking?
That would be really good. No, okay, yeah. So with the mermaid game...
Yes, yeah, I was going to ask you about it.
Yeah, there are basically two puzzle segments that I... did in this game, and the first one is sort of a maze, like, you know, we're in a cave system, and there are five tunnels, and, you know, you need to explore all five of the tunnels, and, you know, one of the tunnels has, like, a shell, which you have to use in a different tunnel. It's very simple. I was expecting to do something way more complicated, but I decided to make it simple on purpose, and then it ended up being, like, 15 pages of programming. In any case, it's interesting to see how I did this, because I wrote that puzzle before understanding how to program anything, if that makes mm-hmm. sense. I didn't know how to program, so basically I did it like three different ways, just guessing how to program it in RenPy, RenPy, depending on your regional accent.
I think it's RenPy, because I think the Pi is short for Python, programming language it's built on. But I think I've also read that the creator says he doesn't care, so.
RenPy Tom doesn't care anymore.
Nah, yeah.
So, let's see, with the first puzzle, I basically did it with a giant menu system. It's basically a huge menu. The second one, I just did a bunch of... you know, conditionals. So if you have this variable, so it's based on variables. And then the third one, I just split up the room into like four different parts and you know,
yeah.
basically split that up into four different sections. So it's like, okay, if this is your first time mm-hmm. visiting the room, you get this variation of the room. If it's your second time visiting, you know, you get this variation, so on and so forth. And it's kind of interesting in a nerdy sort of way, just to see, like, those all work, but it's just interesting, the differences mm-hmm, between mm-hmm, them. Mm-hmm. And I can clearly see that what happened, you know, for the last two rooms is I got tired of programming and then just decided to go for the shortest possible programming method. It's like, okay, well, you no longer have the option to ignore the puzzle and just go back. Now, as soon as you find the puzzle, you are forced into the puzzle until you get a solution.
Yeah. And that stuff just always takes me forever. I mean, I've only tried to do puzzles in, the two Francie Drew games, I think. But it's always like, you know, I'll be coding. Oh, these scenes are going by really quick. Oh, man, I'm making real progress. And then, like, 3 days of me trying to figure out how to make a puzzle work. You know, stuff like that. It's rewarding in the end. It's really rewarding when the puzzle actually works. But it doesn't feel very rewarding when... At least when I'm doing it, it's frustrating most of the time.
Yeah.
Smacking my head.
Yeah. With puzzle number two, I think it's a lot better because I actually, you know, looked up how to do some programming before writing it into
yeah.
the script.
Well, that does help.
So, I mean, that helps. But I tried to do an adventure game segment.
Okay.
Oh, here, let me bring up these details. There's a segment in the game where the hero goes onto the Titanic, and, you know, she's a mermaid.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes onto the Titanic and basically takes a tour and sees things. And it's basically so she can figure out how to destroy the Titanic. It's like, oh, she learns about the bulkheads. That's really the entire point of that segment.
You're destroying the Titanic? Hasn't the Titanic been through enough?
No, it has not.
Oh.
No. It's funny because I realize the Titanic has engines and stuff like that, but I don't know anything mm-hmm. about engines. So.
Of course not, yeah.
The way it works in the script is like they visit the bulkheads, and then the tour guide says, oh, we're going to the engines next. And the mermaid's like, I don't know what that word means. That's probably not important. And then she just ignores it.
Perfect. Yeah, there you go. That's a good way to get around that.
Yeah. Basically, in this, I guess, meta segment, it's like this day of the game, you've got two things to do. You need to talk to a specific character and go on the tour of the Titanic. And, you know, talking to that specific character was like 10 pages long. It's kind of a long conversation, but mm-hmm. the tour of the Titanic was like a page and a half at most, and that's including a lot of fluff, because there was really nothing in that section that was important besides she learns how bulkheads work, which
sure.
I had to look up. So, hey. So I just asked my wife, it's like, what could I do here to like make this segment better, because it's really lopsided right now. And she said, oh, you need to have a puzzle where she gets locked in a room and she has to escape. I'm like, I think they did that in 999, but I'm doing it.
Yeah, and water starts slowly filling the room and you have to solve all the puzzles before you... Well, I guess you're a mermaid, so you wouldn't drown. It'd be okay, actually.
Yeah, I was thinking... I was thinking of having three endings to the game, and it was going to be, it's like, okay, what if she gets trapped in the bulkhead again while it's filling up with water, and that completely changes the dynamic of this, you know, escape room puzzle segment, mm-hmm. because, you know, she can swim in water, and she can reach higher up areas, and I decided against it, because I couldn't really think of anything else that would be super different. But, so I'm trying to do this escape room, sort of like an adventure game segment, and I figured I'd make it simple, like, you know, instead of having four walls to the room, this room apparently only has three walls, okay. Wall number four is entirely the exit door and nothing else.
Sure, that works.
Yeah. And, you know, each area has two inventory items and, you know, two items that you use inventory items on. I'm not sure if that makes sense, but...
I'm really excited to see how this works, because I don't know how to easily do point-and-click mechanics, point-and-click adventure mechanics in RenPy. I'd be really curious to see what you come up with and how it works.
I'll be really curious to see if, you know, I ran it through, if I run it through and it goes through. Here, I've got my notes here. It's like, okay, so basically, you know, three areas in the room, each one has two inventory items. And so three areas, two items each, that adds up to like six puzzles. There are six puzzles where you use an item on a different item. So I decided to add a second round to the challenge. You know, all these six puzzles, well, all of those six puzzles give you one item, and, you know, each item gets used on another, so that gives you three more puzzles. So overall, there are nine puzzles. Basically, you've got nine possible inventory items that you can use on stuff, you know, nine possible things that you can use inventory items on. So I was stupid. I programmed every single possible combination. So she has unique dialogue for all 81 possibilities.
Yeah, technically, that's awesome.
Technically 90, but that leads to spoilers with the puzzle, so...
No, that's good. That's what you should do. That's fun.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've played like, you know, big full-length adventure games where they try to do that too. I think Daedalic's games do that a lot, like the Deponia games. Like, not for quite every interaction, but nearly every possible interaction. Like, everything that you can use an item on, there's like a specific tailored interaction, no matter how like obscure or stupid the interaction is. He still says something about it. I think that's fun. I think it's cool when games do that. So that's awesome.
Well, I even did that for impossible interactions.
Yes. Wait, like ones where like you can't even possibly have this item in this room, like stuff like that.
Yeah, or... you can't even possibly have this item. So like,
like if people hack the game, they get to see the secret dialogue.
Yeah, give me an example of an adventure game puzzle. Oh gosh.
Using the crowbar on the window to break it open.
Okay, use the crowbar on the window in order to get a broken piece of glass.
Yeah.
And so, what if you use the broken piece of glass on the window?
On the window. Oh no.
It's like no, you can't do that because you got the broken piece of glass from the window. So I mean, I still programmed. It's like, wait a minute, didn't I get this item?
Well, I mean, that's very thorough, at least. Like, it means you're not gonna miss anything if you do it that way. So I mean, that's something that's cool. And like, yeah, maybe people dig in the code and figure that out. I actually I not to go off on too much of a tangent, but speaking of people digging into the code, Cat President on Steam, someone recently wrote an achievements guide, a guide to getting all the achievements, and they definitely figured out how to get all the achievements by just looking at the raw code and seeing where it says add achievement. because like they reference things that you could only know if you've seen the code, and they were like talking with me about it. So I don't know how they did that. I didn't think I made that possible.
I tried to steal the code from. No, I didn't. I wanted to steal some of those pictures because that was, you know, for my placeholder art, but it's not really that big of a deal.
Oh, yeah, whatever you want, I'll be happy to send it along. It shouldn't be too much trouble. Just let me know.
Okay. Well, what I'm doing right now is, like I said, I finished writing the game, and now I'm basically just, it's not a beta version. Whatever the word is for the version of the game that's just placeholder art.
I guess alpha.
Alpha?
Pre-alpha, maybe? I feel like that's a phrase. Why not?
Let's go with that, yeah.
Let's go with pre-alpha.
Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon. Yeah, so, no, right now I'm just making the version of the game where it's just placeholder art. There's no music or sound effects or anything.
Oh,
like,
you have a whole world of fun things to explore when you start putting that stuff in.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it's going to be great.
I can. That's another thing, too. I can send you links to the different places where I find... public domain and Creative Commons music and sound effects and stuff like that. I got like a whole library of websites you can visit.
Oh, good. I'll need bubble sound effects, and that's literally the only sound effect I could think of.
Oh, you gotta add sound effects. It really makes the game feel more rich. At least I think so.
Yeah. So I mean, it's gonna be in this maze, cave maze where she swims around, and I mean, that's what the bubble sound effects are gonna be. I guess getting back to how to program an adventure game segment. I know it's possible to have the user just click on a picture. Mm-hmm. You know, like they click on the actual screen. It's like, whoa, I clicked on the crowbar, and the crowbar gets added to my inventory.
Mm-hmm.
But that sounds complicated, so I just did a search this area function instead.
Okay.
I don't know, so
it's just like, a regular decision, like text-based menu decision, search area.
Yeah, basically the entire adventure game segment is going to be done through, normal menus.
Now that's interesting. Oh, I really want to see how you do that. That sounds great.
Yeah, so that's how you find items is, I search this area. And once people figure out how to play it, it's probably going to be less interesting, but it's basically, okay, I go to area 1, search it 4 times. Go to area 2, search it 4 times. Area 3, search it 4 times.
Sure.
But, I mean, also in the menu I've got, you know, check your inventory to see what inventory items you've got.
Right.
Interact with various items with the conditional that A, you've already searched the room and found this item, and B, you haven't already solved that puzzle.
Hmm. This is interesting. So this is sounding almost almost like a text adventure, like a Zork kind of game, where it's like you enter a room and then you just have a list of commands that you can like explore, examine, check inventory, all that kind of stuff. Oh, that's interesting. That's a really interesting way to do that.
Yeah,
I
tried to do it through I couldn't figure out any other way to do it. I also added a tutorial,
Ooh, fancy.
What do you call it? A hint system where you call a friend for help. And just for the version that I'm going to be giving to, you know, like people to test, I also added just completely skip this entire segment at the bottom of every menu.
That's handy.
Yeah, but asking a friend for help was surprisingly easy to do. It just checks. It's like, okay, area 1. Have you found everything there? No. Yeah. It tells you, hey, try searching there again. You know, does the same thing for area 2. And then I just have it go down the list of inventory items you might possibly have, and there's a clue related to each inventory item.
Very interesting.
I don't know... You know, I'm writing questions for testers. So basically, right now I'm basically revising the script and, writing out and getting it into an actual game. But I've got some questions for testers about the adventure game segment and everything. With the adventure game segment, I'm trying to do like some of those silly moon logic puzzles that you see in old adventure games, and I'm trying to justify it by the fact that our character is a mermaid.
Okay.
And so, for example, there's like a crate that you you need to open, and you can't use the hammer on it, and you can't use the crowbar on it. are like, there's a plate of mashed potatoes, and you can't use the spoon on it.
Why can't you?
She can't figure out how to use the spoon to get the item that's in the mashed potatoes.
Oh, Michael.
And I was like, I don't know how people are going to react to those puzzles, but I thought it would just be a fun little joke if the obvious solutions are not, you just can't do it.
So I tried to get away with something like that in The Beard in the Mirror. There's a part where the main character, Paul, has to dress like this other character, Lily, has blonde hair and a green dress. And so you're trying to acquire a green dress and blonde hair. And I had, in the dungeon area, I had a mop sitting around. And the entire purpose of the mop was so you could pick it up and try to combine it with the dress. Just so Paul could say, what? That doesn't look anything like hair. That's just a mop. That's stupid. just because I was annoyed of you know, kind of the trope of using the top of a mop as hair because it looks like hair because it doesn't look anything like hair. I wanted to... Lizzo didn't let me get away with that, though. She made me cut that.
Okay. Well, looks like you thought...
I thought it was fun, but no.
Yeah.
Did not make the final version.
So, basically one of the questions I'll be asking testers is, does that make sense or is that annoying? Because it would be pretty easy for me just to go back and, you know, make it so, hey, the mashed potato, the spoon does work on the mashed potatoes.
Yeah. Or just remove the spoon.
I don't want to do that. That's,
oh, no, you don't want to remove the spoon.
That's a lot of work. Plus, I wrote all those possible things that you can use the spoon
on. That's true. You can't get rid of the spoon. Yeah. Fair enough.
Let's see. I had a list of questions to ask you for about publishing. I don't know if, or I guess about programming.
Yeah. Let's go for it. I can try to offer whatever help I can.
Okay. So, with character names,
yes.
Basically with every character, I tried a different character naming situation for pretty much all the various characters. But do you know if there's a way to check what the last letter of a character's name is?
So this is like a name that like the player typed in?
Yeah.
Or, oh man. I know how to check what the name itself is. No. See, so here's the answer is no, I have no idea. But what I would suggest is what's really cool about RenPy as a game development software is that it's been around for a long time and it has a pretty well-established community. So a lot of the times, even when I have like the most obscure question, I can just search for it in Google and there's a decent chance that someone's come across it before. And if nobody has, then you can post on their forums and like the guy who made RenPy, RenPy Tom, will frequently just respond and tell you how to do it. So there's that. But no, I have no idea how to do that.
Yeah, no, I tried to look it up just now with on Google and got nothing.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I mean, I would suggest posting on the forums.
Okay.
Never know.
I imagine the most common situation with this is to do an apostrophe S or S apostrophe, depending on the character's name. But
that's what you're trying to figure out. Okay.
I could just rewrite this section completely and avoid it. But no, actually, the mermaids are speaking Latin, so I just decided that's going to be the mermaid language.
Fun. Didn't we try to translate one of our games into Latin one time?
We translated the one into Spanish, didn't we?
Yeah, my Nigerian prince. I feel like we talked about trying to translate it into Latin too for no reason.
Nobody would play it in that. Yeah, I could probably do it, but
yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, so I mean there's a segment where she's talking to another mermaid and she doesn't want other humans to overhear, and so she purposely speaks in the mermaid language rather than English. So
I feel like the solution to that would be either post on the forums or, just rewrite it so it doesn't use the possessive form of the person's name. Just, like, use a pronoun or just, you know, just redo the sentence entirely.
Yeah, so, I mean, just call her or I could pretend her name doesn't have an accusative. I think that's the... No, that's not the case with Maria, though. Sometimes with proper names, sometimes with not. I'll check it up. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I'm looking this up right now on the podcast, but I can.
That's all right.
I'll pretend her name...
It's our podcast. Do whatever we want.
Maria. Pretend it's vocative. I don't know. Anyway. Gosh, I thought I had three questions. Oh, how do you go back to the title screen? You just use return, right?
I think it's just return, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's an easy, yeah. Nice simple one. And I think that either takes you to the title screen or it might take you to the splash screen if you have one. I'm not sure which.
Oh my, splash.
Yeah, the part in our games where it has the Argolfump logo.
Oh, okay.
Hey, everybody, that thing.
So I have a character named Lieutenant Swimmers, although it's one of the... You input the name for the lieutenant, but the default name is Swimmers.
Sure, yeah.
As opposed to, just type it in with no default name whatsoever, which is the case with the main character.
Okay.
But I was wondering if there's a way to have the text box read, LT space and then Swimmers.
Yes, I think so. Let me look at my code real quick for, I have Pizza Boy open. That's one where you can type the character's name, and let me just look at it.
Because I think that would be some of the characters, some of the name in the text box is player defined, but not all of it, and I wondered if that would totally screw things up.
I wonder if you could do something like, so I'm looking at the Pizza Boy code, it says, like, first name equals, and then it has the part to input what the character's name is, so... Once you do that, it'll set the variable first name to Doug, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how that works, for example. I wonder if then you could, after that, have a bit of code that says, like, introduce a new variable called, like, actual first name, and you could be actual first name equals, quote, lieutenant.
That's it.
And then
that's
name
how
of the variable.
Do it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, that's it.
Okay. That's how we do it. We'd switch names. Okay.
You just change
that's
the
cool.
variable after they input it and just append that to the front. I mean, maybe there's a cleaner way to do it, but that's probably what I would try.
Okay, I'll just add a note. Add a second variable here for actual name. Awesome. Yeah, so with the mermaid's name, here at the start of the game, I wasn't quite sure if naming every character would be worth it. I asked on Twitter if people had any good names for the mermaid character.
Oh yeah, what did you get?
Topaz, Shelly, Pearl, Angel, Veronica,
Shelly.
Splash, yeah. Oceana, Finn's, Splasha, Coral, Fuchsia, Murex. Anyway, so instead of having like a menu that says pick from 12 names. I have a menu that just randomly displays three of those names, so every time you play it, it will suggest three different names, basically.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah.
And then the fourth option is just add your own name, and if you pick Ariel, I think the game yells at you. I don't know if I got rid of that.
As it should. As it should. That's hilarious.
A mermaid named Ariel? Really? That mermaid name is so cliche. Let me fix it for you. And then I change it to Ariel, the font.
Oh, no. Oh, that's pretty good. I like that.
Okay, and the daughter's name, same thing. There were seven names suggested for the daughter, so, randomly picks, like, seven of those names. But then the mom's name is, Mom is Thalassa, no matter what. That's just Greek for sea, so,
okay.
Nothing too fancy there. With the dolphin... Let's see, I had exactly four suggestions for the dolphin's name, so I just put, you can use one of these four suggestions. No opportunity to type in your own name there.
Oh.
But I think with a human name, I also did ask people, what do you think about a human name for this character? And I got some good ones. But the problem is most humans have first names and last names. So I had to try to... basically do twice as much work in order to randomize it, so it would pair random first names with random last names.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So gosh, what were they? 10? Yeah, I got 10 suggestions. And one of them, this is just a joke on my part, but Argelfumpf is one of the names. So I had to throw in extra programming there. So, like, if Argel is randomly picked as your first name, then the last name is automatically Fumpf, no matter what. But with everything else, it's just randomized, so something can be a first name or a last name. Which makes it slightly easier that way. And I think they make fun of you if you pick Argelfumpf.
Oh.
So right, yeah, today, basically today was just me programming up to the first puzzle segment. That's basically all I've been doing. And then after that, it's going to be just a huge breeze because it's basically just all dialogue and simple menu choices. This is something else that I'm doing specifically with the Mermaid game is trying to have longer dialogue options.
Oh, cool, yeah.
Because I know with Cat President, it's basically, you know, hey, River says, hey, do you think I'm sexy? And, you know, your choice is yes or no. And, you know, if she says no, she's like, no, I think you're ugly. Just kidding, I meant yes. And it's basically the same. The conversation basically is the same no matter what. One option has like two or three more lines of dialogue than the other. But other than that, the game just completely is exactly the same.
So you're saying the choices are going to have a little more impact, or you're going to see more differentiation. Is that if that's a word?
Yeah,
between
more
the two choices. Yeah,
yeah, differentiation is a word. Yeah, there's going to be more difference between the two choices.
Yeah.
So like, I mean, it's not going to have too much of an impact overall in the game. I did it two ways, if that makes sense. Let's see. The conversation is, husband? What's a husband? Flipsy, never mind. I forgot mermaids don't have families like dolphins do. And she says, oh, I remember hearing something about that, but I don't remember the specifics. And then you get two choices, like, you could ask him, what is a husband, or do you have a family? So it's, basically like a page. Rather than just three lines,
yeah.
I mean,
no, that's cool.
It's like a page for each option before they come back. And the way I did it there was I basically wrote the one option one day, and then I wrote the second option the next day. And just doing it that way, by doing them on different days, the dialogue was different enough, even though it's the same basic stuff that gets covered.
That's cool. I think that's something people commented on in Cat President, too, is that they wished that the decisions had a little more impact or at least more difference between the two. So that's really cool that you're addressing that in the new game. I like that.
Yeah. So, and the big confrontation with the villain of the game, that one is just a huge dialogue tree maze. There are like five different plot points for that conversation. You basically kind of pick the order that that it goes through. But basically, that's just a huge conversation, just all the various ways you can go through it. Because I don't know why I split it up so many times, but there are, gosh, 28 different page breaks. So this conversation is made up of 28 unique different scenes. So, I'm trying to make more of an impact with the conversations in this game. So, I was going to ask you about the Twitter text adventure.
Oh, that was so much fun.
Because I've been hogging this. I didn't actually get to see much of this. What happened here?
Yeah. So, I needed a break after a long contract I'd been working on. I just needed to, you know, kind of do something that was just for fun. So, the thing I came up with was I wanted to do an interactive text adventure through Twitter. So the way I did it was I would set the scene. I would say something like you arrive at the door to an old mansion, and I'd describe the mansion, describe what you're seeing and hearing, and then I would ask, what do you do? And then people would tweet out their responses of what they thought we should do, and I would just kind of pick the most interesting one, and we would build this like collaborative interactive story out from there. It was like me and I think we had like 9 different people participating, so it wasn't like a huge thing, but I did it over the course of an afternoon, just on a, you know, random day on the O-Rock Studios Twitter account.
Yeah, you know, obviously, you know, I mentioned to you, it's like, isn't there some way to easily make this into a game?
No, it was just for fun. I didn't want to. I have too many ideas for games as it is right now. I don't need to mine the weird little story about what it was. About a haunted house and a person that turned into a giant blob of jello. It was a very silly story.
Yeah, so you made it all up on the fly. That's
yeah,
neat.
Yeah. Yeah, it was cool. And like I tried really hard to incorporate the things that people were adding. Like there was at least one person on Twitter who was like not just saying what the reaction was, but she was trying to add to the lore of the story too, like adding her own spin, like trying to add to the character's backstory, trying to add to the blob monster. Who is this person? And I thought that was really cool. So I was trying really hard to make sure that people's, what they typed, like really the answers they submitted really had an impact on the story. And it wasn't just me kind of railroading them into whatever I wanted to do, which was kind of easy because I didn't know what I wanted to do. I just knew I wanted to tell a haunted house story. That was sort of as far as my prep work went on that.
Well, I'll keep that in mind. I'll try to do one for the Francie Drew game release.
Interactive. Oh, that'd be fun. Yeah, a way to promote Francie Drew. Oh, that'd be good.
Yeah, I think it'd
interactive be, mystery story.
Yeah, how would I do it? I don't know, like, there are like four places. Maybe it'd be just like the Francie Drew 2, where, you know, you've got like six... There are basically six places you need to investigate. I remember. Mm-hmm. It's like you investigate two, and then a cutscene happens, and then you investigate two, and then a cutscene happens. Basically, you're just deciding what order you're going through these scenes and puzzles. You're not really changing too much.
Yeah, I mean that was sort of a key thing that I was trying to do. Was really like the players were really defining how the story played out. It wasn't like like I said, it wasn't prepped. It wasn't pre-written at all. So it might be kind of hard to do that with a mystery game. Like if you know who done it, then it's hard to kind of let the players investigate who done it. Although I guess you could set it up so that, you know, they choose what to investigate and stuff like that and try to find the clues and whether they find the clues or not.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something I sort of worked into my game too, was that after, you know, about like a half hour, I randomly just introduced hit points into the game. Like, the character didn't have any health bar until something happened where the character got hurt, and I'm like, oh, yeah, you should have hit points now. And that introduced the possibility that the character could definitely die at some point. And there is a part in the game where I was 100% sure that I was going to kill the character. There, like, I was sure that the Twitter was going to lose and the character would die. But then someone came up with a creative solution and got out of that just in time, but...
So basically, did you like have a solution in mind, or are you just for a creative solution?
I was waiting to see if they came up with an idea that I thought was reasonable, and if they didn't, like, it was what they were. They had been sucked in by the Jell-O monster. They were drowning in Jell-O, and like I had them losing hit points every few tweets, I guess. And if they didn't come up with a way that I thought was a reasonable solution to get out of the Jell-O, they were definitely going to drown and die. And that was going to be the end of the text adventure. I was all set to do that. I dare say I was excited to do it. But then someone came up with a solution of one of the items that they had picked up was a book of puns. And then they read from the book of puns. Or what was it? They gave the book of puns to the blob monster or something. In any case, it made the Jell-O monster laugh so hard, gave such a raucous belly laugh that the character was expelled from the Jell-O and up through the hole in the ceiling, and they were able to grab on the ledge and pull themselves up.
Oh, that's so sweet.
It was, yeah. I do hope to do something like that again. It was a lot of fun, and we did give out prizes too at the end. I let people choose a free code to any of the O-Rock Studios games or one of the Awkward Steve pins that I had printed up that say, "Hi, I'm awkward" on them. A bunch of people picked those and I mailed them out to them.
Okay. Let's see, any other... You know, I posted on my blog a lot about timed strategy game, but that's all stuff I wrote like weeks ago at this point because I write my blog in advance. So.
Sure.
I just have all those notes in a text file waiting for me to open it up someday.
I've made a lot of progress on Pizza Delivery Boy over the last few weeks since my contract wrapped up. I've coded, you know, the next 10 pages or so. I think I'm halfway through whatever chapter I've been on for the last while. Where I got stuck for a little while. Oh, the scene with where they're playing the cell phone game. I kind of got tripped up by that for a little while.
Yeah, so that's the time strategy game parody, I guess. Oh.
That's fun. But yeah. I'm making very, very steady progress on it. I'm very happy about that. So I don't know when it's going to be finished or anything. It's interesting. You are so much faster at all of this than I am. It's very, very impressive. Both writing and the coding. Yeah. I mean, the only thing I'll say with Pizza Boy is, like, I am doing the sound, the music, and the art and everything. Like, I'm basically, like, making the finished scene as I go. I'm not really doing much in the way of placeholders. I'm just trying to finalize everything to the extent that I can as I go on the first shot.
Yeah, so. Yeah, that's...
That's slowing me down a little bit, but yeah, I've always been impressed by how fast you are, how efficient you are at this stuff. It's really impressive.
Yeah, you know, I feel like with some things I'm very efficient, and other things I'm not. Like, I haven't touched the Catholic priest game. I have let that email that you sent just sit in my inbox for months. I'm going to respond.
I don't even remember what I emailed you, so.
We still need to figure out what love interest number two is going to be, and I think I might have figured it out. Well, I mean, you know, it's so tough. It's like, I want it to be somebody who I can't put a name and face to. But basically, the idea I had in my mind, I know I've wanted to put, like, a speed dating scene in a game forever. And today, that's all the notes I have for Francie Drew 3.
Oh, and the speed dating sham.
And the speed dating sham, which I was...
Yeah.
Which, for those of you who don't know,
maybe that should be the Twitter adventure.
Yeah. You know, I sent Paul a thing for... even before we picked the first game, we did My Nigerian Prince, and it was like, we've got to do a Francie Drew game, and I suggested three of them, and one of them was the speed dating sham. So I was just thinking...
The lost Francie Drew game.
Yeah. I was just thinking there's got to be a way to work that into the Catholic priest game, so I was thinking, it's like, what would be, like, you know, it gets told that, you know, priests can, you know, get married and such... And I was thinking there'd be a girl who forces our hero to go speed dating to find a girlfriend because he totally has to do it now that he can.
Man, we don't have time to get into this now, but many years ago, before you and I started working on games together, I was trying to work with a group of people to put together a game called, I think it was called Speed Hating Any Man Will Do. it was a game about, you know, it was a romance dating sim about going to a speed dating event and everyone's just like absolutely the worst person in the world and you have to pick one of them and go on a date with them. It was a lot of fun, but the team just totally fell apart.
That sounds amazing. We need to make that game.
I got permission from the other people who worked on it to move forward on, without them if we ever wanted to. If you want, someday I'll send you the notes for it.
Oh, it's just notes. You don't have like an actual script.
We have part of a script. I think we have like the intro and we have like all of the characters kind of fleshed out. That was a game where I kind of learned how to use RenPy, so there actually is like a coded version, like I coded the intro and whatever to that game, stuff like that. Man, yeah, that was fun. All right, so we're running out of time, so we got a question on Twitter. Do we want to talk about it real quick?
Sure.
Yeah, this question comes to us from Elizabeth Pfeffer, and she wants to know, do you like to play holiday themed games? And what are you dressing for Halloween?
So this was an idea that came into my mind when perusing the holiday-themed section of a library. I just noticed, wow, they've got a full Thanksgiving section and there are no Thanksgiving video games. So it's like, we should make a Thanksgiving video game.
Okay, what would a Thanksgiving video game be?
I have absolutely no idea. That was as far as my thought
got. That's about as far as it got, yeah. That's
there's
fun.
Also a Cinco de Mayo section. I'm like, is there a Cinco de Mayo video game? Probably, maybe. Bastille Day video game. Reenact the storming.
Be interesting. Yeah, I feel like I've played like basically no games centered around holidays. I was wondering. I bet there's like hidden object games about Christmas and stuff like that.
Oh, there are tons of Christmas games.
Yeah,
that's a category of the casual games. Nope, we've got a couple of Cinco de Mayo games. We've got Cinco de Mayo, the Battle of Puebla, 1862, which is a board game. And there's a couple that are drinking games.
Hmm. Where are you finding these?
And there is 2 de Mayo. I just searched Cinco de Mayo video game on Google.
Okay. I thought you had some fancy website. You were like, I guess Google is a fancy website, but yeah.
Cinco de Mayo guitar mahjong. Okay. But sounds like they just threw different words together and tried to make a story.
St. Patrick's Day visual novel. No, nothing. There we go. We could make a St. Patrick's Day game. Anyway, and Halloween, you dressing up for Halloween this year?
Nope.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, I was
sorry.
I was gonna do a costume in tandem with the baby, but you know, my wife went ahead and bought costume for the baby without consulting me first, so now I'm just not having any costume in protest.
Oh. Yeah, I haven't really dressed for Halloween probably since, like, we were required to for school. Is Halloween, like, I like the spookiness of Halloween, I like the candy, but I've never really been into the dressing up part, or like Halloween parties or anything like that. It's just, it's never been my thing.
I like the candy and the costumes. I don't really don't like the spookiness.
Oh.
So I'm the other way. You know, I'm not a big fan of scary movies or anything.
I used to get really into decorating our house for Halloween. Like, I still have like 2 or 3 boxes of just Halloween decorations. Like, I have like a rug in the shape of a spider web. I have like an almost like animatronic ghost that like you nail to 2 different walls and it flies around your room on a string. But the problem was that it takes a lot of time to get set up these decorations. And then like Christmas is like right around the corner and I really go all out decorating for Christmas. And it was just too much. If Halloween was in like April, I'd probably still decorate for it, but it's too much. Mm-hmm. I can't handle it. I ended up repurposing the flying ghost as I put a Santa hat on it and now it's the spirit of Christmas. It's so bad. Yeah, I hope that answered your question, Elizabeth. We're both not great at Halloween, I guess.
Yeah, it always made me wonder about cosplaying, too.
Yeah.
That's like a special level, but I'm like, no, Halloween's enough.
Well, maybe I'll dress as Awkward Steve for Halloween.
I put on a cowboy hat and said, howdy, howdy, and that was my costume.
All right. I think that's about it for this episode. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Paul M. Franzen, and Michael is at Arglefumpf, which is spelled exactly as it sounds. You can check out all of our games on Steam or itch.io, or just visit orock.com for the complete library. Our theme song is Dead Monster by March of the Danger Men, and you can check them out on SoundCloud. And I wanted to remind everyone that next month I'm going to be at Retro Game Con in Syracuse, New York, November... whenever, the 16th, 17th, I don't know, look it up on the internet. But I'm going to be there. We're going to be playing, I think, The Beard in the Mirror, because that's an appropriately retro game. So if you want to come hang out with me, talk games, play some games, that's where I'm going to be. And if you have any questions about game development or any of our games specifically, we would love to hear them. Email them to podcast@oarock.com. Anything you'd like to add, Michael?
Nope. Have a happy Halloween, everyone.
Yeah, happy spooky times.
Yeah, you know, Twitter us if you're dressed up like any of our characters.
Yes, oh my god, I will die if someone is dressed as Ranty Drew or Awkward Steve or a cat. I want to see some Frisky pictures. I follow Frisky's owner on Twitter. That'd be great.
Just share it with Frisky's owner and scare them.
Oh, yeah. Yes, absolutely. I want to see someone dressed as a giant presidential cat. That's what I want from Halloween this year. All right. Bye, everyone.
Okay, goodbye. Here's another thing. My wife says she doesn't like the idea of the mermaid getting flirty with the dolphin. And it was totally her idea to begin with.
No, you have to leave it in. That's awesome.
So it's switched to the dolphin gets the dolphin has like a pretty obvious crush on her, and she just doesn't realize it.
Aww.
It's sort of switched to that.